You are locked into the Philadelphia Eagles. What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. As always, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Louis DiBiase here joining you on this Wednesday edition of the show. Really excited to continue our What If series across the podcast. This is episode 7, and it's the final What If on the Locked On Eagles podcast, and we've been doing this across the Locked On NFL channel. So if you're interested in some what ifs about other teams, about the league in general, you can go subscribe to any Locked On NFL podcast, including Locked On Eagles, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, you name it, we're available. And we also post our shows on LockedOnEagles.com. I've had a lot of fun with these. Honestly, I think these last 7 episodes have been some of the most fun I've had doing this podcast, taking, you know, trips down memory lane and thinking about how if one thing went different in Eagles history in a season, if one injury didn't happen, or if an injury did happen, or if this trade happens or it doesn't happen, if this coach either keeps his job or gets fired, if this game is won, if it's not, like, what happens? There's just so many domino effects. One little thing, and we've kind of noticed that trend throughout these podcasts, that one thing could change years worth of results when it comes to the history of not only the Eagles and what happens season by season, but really the NFL in general. And it's crazy to see how one little move here could have changed the Eagles' Super Bowl season in 2017. And then another one here. So, like, we talked about Russell Wilson potentially getting drafted by the Eagles in 2012 and how that could have changed a potential championship season. As to could have Chip Kelly trading up for Marcus Mariota. We did that podcast on Friday. Also, like, 2018, Alshon Jeffrey catches that pass. In New Orleans, do they win another Super Bowl? Does that mean Carson Wentz is still your quarterback in 2019? Does he have the opportunity to get injured in that wild card game? So many different avenues and wormholes, I guess you could say, or cans of worms, I would rather say. Still thinking about that report that NASA found a parallel universe. I just was reading that article right before the podcast, so maybe that's why I said wormhole instead of can of worms, but it's crazy how one domino falls and how many other ones it can knock over. And today we're going to do that again. However, I know I've been focusing on, like, 2010 Eagles on, right? 2010 up until 2020. That's kind of the era, the end of the Andy Reid era, the Chip Kelly era, the Doug Peterson era is really what we've been focusing on over these past 6 podcasts, because I think that's where a lot of the what-ifs lie. But today I want to go back to 1985 to 19, I guess you could say, like, the 10 years from 85 to 95, that core of Randall Cunningham, Reggie White, Seth Joyner, Eric Allen, Clyde Simmons, just a Jerome Brown, Chris Carter, Fred Barnett, Buddy Ryan, Ray Rhodes, Rich Kotite. I want to look back at that team and think about a lot of the what-ifs that certain things change when it comes to maybe the coaching staff, when it comes to personnel, results of games that could have changed the course of history when it comes to, like, that era of Eagles football that was so talented and yet had nothing to show for that talent. They had one playoff win in that, because, again, I would say it goes from whenever Randall Cunningham took over as quarterback, so, like, 1987 up until 1994. They won one playoff game in 1992 against the New Orleans Saints, despite, to me, having one of the most talented cores, not just in Eagles history, but in NFL history. So I sat down with Jeff Kerr of CBS Sports, also formerly of 24/7 Sports, which was a network through CBS where he ran the Philadelphia Eagles side of that network. He is a diehard Eagles guy, Penn State alumni, moved on to bigger and better things, now as an NFL reporter for CBS, and he's an Eagles historian. He is a walking Eagles encyclopedia. He loves to talk about the old days. So I thought, as a younger Eagles analyst that's 22 years old, I want to get somebody a little bit older here, not to age Jeff, but I want to talk to somebody that remembers that time very vividly, and I want to ask him, like, what went wrong with that team in Kelly Green? They looked good, they had talent, they were fun to watch, but it just never formulated into a deep playoff run, any sort of real chance to win a championship. And I want to know why. I want to know what if, you know, things went differently. Certain things, if they went differently, if that could have changed what happened. Because, again, they only had one playoff win to show for all of that talent. Hall of Famers, to me, on both sides of the football. Some that have already made it, and I think some that will make it or very likely should make it. So that's coming up on today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. We are taking a trip down memory lane, and this time we are going farther back, heading into the 1980s and 1990s era of Philadelphia Eagles football. We just got to hit one break, and then we'll be right back, and we'll get into it with Jeff Kerr of CBS Sports. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Guys, we'd like to thank our sponsor on today's Locked On Eagles podcast, and that's our good friends over at Built Bar. I'm not normally a huge protein bar guy, but let me tell you, if you closed your eyes and you took a bite out of the orange vanilla style of Built Bar or the peanut butter, the cookies and cream, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between this Built Bar and a candy bar. Honestly, they are that good, and they're such a healthy alternative snack, especially before a workout. I love to eat them, or after as well. They're really perfect for your daily routine. They also have these brand new energy boost, all natural energy drink mixes that you just put in a water bottle. You mix it up. It can be, you know, fruit punch. I had a strawberry pineapple the other day. And as somebody that likes to work the overnight radio shifts, it's huge for me. So Built Bar has so many awesome products. It's, again, a very healthy alternative. My girlfriend's been really into the bars. Little tip, if you freeze the Built Bar, tastes just as good. If you go to BuiltBar.com and use our promo code LOCKEDON, you're going to get $10 off your first box. Go to BuiltBar.com and use our promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first box. We thank Built Bar for sponsoring Locked On Eagles today. All right, Eagles fans, welcome back into the Locked On Eagles podcast, another edition of our What If series that we've been doing throughout the past couple weeks and across the Locked On Podcast Network. And today, I know throughout our past, we've done six of these. We've really been focusing on the 2000s Eagles, right, early 2000s, more so anything after 2010. There's been a lot of What Ifs in the Chip Kelly era, in even the Doug Peterson era over the last couple years, so we've really been focusing on that. But now I want to hop into a time machine and head back to 1990, and really just the 90s Eagles and the late 1980s Eagles, and talk about what happened with that team. What if things went different just across the roster, because that was such a talented core that really did not win much of anything. So I thought to bring on one of my good friends on Twitter, an NFL writer for CBS Sports, also covered the Philadelphia Eagles for the longest time on CBS Sports' 24/7 sports website. It's Jeff Kerr. You can follow him on Twitter at JeffKerrCBS. Jeff, what's up, man? Thanks for coming on. It's been a couple years here. I've been talking to you since starting the podcast. You've been a big supporter of me, which I really appreciate, but I'm really glad to finally get you on the podcast for the first time.
Yeah, it feels like the Avengers, you know, Louie? We've been hyping this movie up for so long, and we've never done it, and we're finally in post-production.
Well, at least LeSean McCoy didn't spoil it, right?
You know, I stopped following LeSean McCoy a week before that happened. I don't know why I did. And everybody's like, oh, he just spoiled Endgame. Didn't you know that? I'm like, no, I didn't know that. And yeah, I didn't get to see Endgame till Sunday that week. So I thought I was going to get spoiled anyway. Thank God that I didn't.
I unfollowed him on Twitter that week because I had heard he had spoiled it. But the problem was I forgot to unfollow him on Instagram. But McCoy's still somebody that, look, he could have did that a million times to me. Still love that player and what he did for the Philadelphia Eagles. And we actually talked a lot about McCoy a couple days ago and the potential of him returning or the Eagles adding another running back, whether it's Carlos Hyde or Devonta Freeman. So for our listeners, you know, checking out this episode, you can go back on any podcast platform and listen to that with myself and my co-host Gino Camilleri. But today, Jeff Kerr hanging out with me again of CBS Sports, formerly of 24/7 Sports on the CBS network, talking about the Philadelphia Eagles. All right, Jeff, let's get into the late 1980s Philadelphia Eagles, the 1990s. I would say, really, I'm more so focusing on, like, not 95 when Rodney Peete and, you know, Ray Rhodes and that core with Ricky Waters won a playoff game, but more so from, like, I don't know, when Cunningham was the quarterback. So 85 to, I would say, like 93 is really the focus here. I mean, Jeff, that was a team loaded with stars. Obviously, one of the most talented defensive cores ever. Reggie White, Jerome Brown, Clyde Simmons, Seth Joyner, Eric Allen, Andre Waters. I mean, that team was second in takeaways in 1988, first in 89. They were atop the league in pretty much every category in 1991, and yet they had one playoff win to show for it. And again, they had one of the most gifted quarterbacks of all time in Randall Cunningham. I mean, that's exactly, to me, Cunningham then is exactly what the modern NFL day wants in their quarterbacks, right? Arm talent, tall, bendy, mobile, athletic, crazy athletic. athleticism. If I could pick one player I wish I could see live as a young 22-year-old doing this, I think Cunningham might be that guy. So you add that on offense, you add that incredible defense, and one playoff win in 1992. Like, Jeff, how does that happen with such a talented team?
Well, for one, Buddy Ryan just did not care about offense. Randall Cunningham
wrote down.
Randall Cunningham had a quarterback coach. His name was Doug Goble, and he did an amazing job with developing Cunningham, and he was basically Buddy Ryan's guy to develop Randall Cunningham. But the Eagles had the worst offensive line in the NFL throughout the late 80s, throughout the early 90s. It's completely different than what we're accustomed to, with Andy Reid having studs across the board, Chip Kelly having studs across the board, and Doug Peterson. That seemed to be the new culture of the Eagles once Jeffrey Lurie took over. Really, it was more Andy Reid. But they just had a terrible offensive line. Cunningham was among the league leaders in times getting sacked every year, and a lot of that was because of him. But that's really all they had. Unfortunately, Mike Quick had that terrible knee injury that ruined his career in his late 20s, early 30s, which hurt the Eagles. But Buddy Ryan cared about one thing, and that was defense. And he more focused on guys like Terry Hodge, who people don't remember that well, but he was on those late 80s Eagles teams. He led the team of 8 interceptions in 1988, their first really good year. And right. I know everybody likes to rip on Buddy for going 0-3 in the playoffs, and look, two of those losses probably shouldn't have happened, but there was a lot of unfortunate events, like the Fog Bowl. Cunningham still threw for 400 yards, but there's nothing you could have done. It's unfortunately, the Eagles were snakebit there. They shouldn't have lost in 1989 to the Rams. Cunningham was beaten, defeated. The Eagles' defense, they played well enough to win, but when you give up 21 points, that just isn't good enough. And that was the expectation they had. They did not give up 20 points. So that was unfortunate for them. In 1990, everybody, this is what I can't stand about the Eagles fans. They love to talk about the body bag game. Right. Oh, the body bag game, the body bag game. The Redskins are on their fourth quarterback. Everybody seems to forget the Redskins beat the Eagles in the playoffs 5 weeks later. That game.
Yeah, that's very true. Let me ask you, because I was kind of in the same mindset, but obviously I'm younger. I did not witness that team firsthand. So, you know, throughout the past couple months, I would say here with this quarantine period, no live sports, I've been going back and rewatching. Because again, like if I could go back in time and watch one athlete live, I might choose Randall Cunningham with the Eagles from like 87 to 1990. He's just like, that's the kind of quarterback I grew up loving. Have a couple of his jerseys too. Like growing up, he was like that player I never saw that I wish I did. So I rewatched a bunch of games. The Eagles posted all these yearbooks on their YouTube page over the past couple days, so I've been binging those from the 80s and 90s just to really try to get a grasp of what happened. And I kind of came to that same sentiment, Jeff. Like, I just don't think Cunningham had the support system other quarterbacks had, you know, when it comes to the coaching staff. Like you said, offensive line, he was sacked the most times in the league, Cunningham, that is, 5 times in his career with Philadelphia. So, like, you look at the modern day, like what Mahomes has to work with in Kansas City, with Andy Reid, even like what McNabb had to work with in Andy Reid, and Michael Vick getting the best out of him in 2010, and the support system Carson Wentz has had, and Nick Foles. I mean, Cunningham just, he didn't have that. I mean, he didn't have awful weapons, I would say, in like the late 80s, but as you said, Mike Quick would get injured a lot. Chris Carter, a couple, you know, he had that 11 touchdown season, but then, you know, he gets cut and ends up becoming a star in Minnesota. Like, he didn't have those weapons until Chris Carter and Randy Moss in Minnesota, and by that time, you know, he's an older player. So I agree. I think it was just a collection of everything, and it stinks because I feel like just maybe a different head coach, a couple different moves here when it comes to skill position players. Again, like Keith Jackson, like awesome tight end. Keith Byers, versatile running back. However, I just don't think he had quite enough to, when the defense, again, like you said, didn't allow less than 20 points, you know, could they keep up?
Well, that was the thing, too, with, you mentioned Chris Carter. In a way, Buddy Ryan saved Chris Carter's life because Carter just had a history of drug issues.
Absolutely.
He had to cut him. He didn't have a choice. Look, Carter revitalized his career in Minnesota and ended up becoming that Hall of Fame receiver. But it's like you said, you mentioned the 11 touchdowns with the Eagles. It's not like he sucked in Philadelphia. He just wasn't the Chris Carter. All he does is catch touchdowns.
It was just short-lived, right? I mean, because after that, it's Fred Barnett, Calvin Williams. I mean, that's, you know what, Jeff, that screams to me like 2016 Eagles. Like, Jordan Matthews, you got Zach Ertz, but not a whole lot to work with.
Now, I'll say this about Arkansas Fred and Calvin Williams. They were a lot better than what people give them credit for. Okay. In 1990, the Eagles drafted three guys. They drafted Mike Bellamy, their second-round pick out of Notre Dame, who was supposed to be a stud. He was a stud in college. And then they drafted Fred Barnett and Calvin Williams later. Mike Bellamy never played a down in the NFL. He got cut. And Barnett and Williams actually ended up being surprising picks, and they lasted in the NFL a good 7-8 years. Like, when I think of Fred Barnett, I think of a guy, he would have been an awesome number two. They just didn't have a number two. He was the number one.
He had to be the one. Like Jordan Matthews, right? Like, Jordan Matthews had to be the number one in 2015 and 2016, and he was never a number one.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Todd Pixon. Todd Pixon wasn't that bad of a receiver. Everybody just remembers him as, that guy that McNabb had to throw to for a couple years. And yeah, Fred Barnett made a lot of big plays for the Eagles.
Oh, yeah.
Same with Calvin Williams. And it was just unfortunate that I feel like if Randall Cunningham would have had them more pre-ACL injury, they would have been a lot better, because they were a Cunningham-type receiver. He would make a play and he would throw the ball down the field and they would be open. But Cunningham just didn't have that mobility after he tore the ACL. And that's what's unfortunate about it. And I want to get to this point too. You know how I know you're a big Michael Vick guy.
Yep.
Randall Cunningham did so much more in his prime than Michael Vick did in his. And Michael Vick was incredible. But when I hear people say Michael Vick should be in the Hall of Fame, that drives me absolutely insane. Because if you want to go that route, that's fine. Just remember there was a guy who did it before him and did it better.
Right, and Cunningham actually was the all-time leading rusher for a quarterback. I was actually at the game Michael Vick broke that record in 2011, but I think you're right. I think Cunningham, for everything I'm saying and you're saying about him not having the best support system, I do, Jeff, wonder about the possibilities, though. Like, if he had an Andy Reid-type head coach, right, and he had, because you saw what he could do, even though when he lost his mobility and after that ACL injury, and, you get to the late 90s when he comes out of retirement, goes to Minnesota, still, that team probably should have made that Super Bowl with Cunningham, with Chris Carter, with Randy Moss. I look at that, and then I look at Michael Vick in 2010, and when he finally got that support system in Philadelphia, not just that, but, when he finally put it together as a complete player, and he had that mobility. If Cunningham was able to do that in 87, 88, 89, 1990, holy cow, Jeff, we could be talking about one of the best quarterback talents of all time. And again, that's not to say he wasn't good in those years. 1990 especially, the guy threw for 30 touchdowns. He ran for, 942 and five other scores. So he had nearly 40 touchdowns and, almost 1,000 yards rushing. So, he was a really good player in Philly. It just goes to show, though, what the floor was and what the ceiling could have been. It's a crazy what if.
If you want to go on fantasy football seasons, the Randall Cunningham 1990 season was the benchmark for fantasy football quarterbacks.
He was a walking box score blow.
For a lot of years, until Peyton Manning threw for 49 touchdowns in 04, for the old school fantasy football players, that was it. Randall Cunningham's 1990 season was, if you had Randall Cunningham, you won. It was case closed. He ran for so many touchdowns, so many yards. He threw for and he played all 16 games. That was really the last year he played all 16 games, because that's what was so frustrating in the early 90s. And granted, I was really young then. These are my first true memories of the East.
Yeah.
Randall Cunningham not being Randall Cunningham. 1993, he played four games and they went 4-0 in the starts, but he was always hurt and. Yep. He made a bunch of dumb decisions. I just remember my dad yelling, "Cunningham, you bum, this and that." And because he would just make a lot of dumb decisions and you're washed up. And he was only in his early 30s at the time. And it was just so frustrating to watch, because Rich Kotite wasn't a great coach either. That's why Buddy Ryan is so revered in this town, because the two guys that came after him were not good coaches.
Right. If Buddy Ryan was sandwiched in between Andy Reid and Doug Peterson, I don't know if he'd have the same reputation.
Exactly. And I think from when Vermeil ended till Andy Reid, that was all they had.
Right.
It was Ray Rhodes, he got the most out of the talent he had. And Eagles did a good job at free agency and making a team that was 7-2 in 1994 a playoff team in 95.
Sure.
Because that team collapsed. But Ray Rhodes, eventually the message died out. You can only play the underdog card for so long. And
yeah, fair.
When your favorite's to go to the Super Bowl in the middle of 96, that doesn't work anymore. You can't play that you're the underdogs. And Rhodes was able to, how can I put it? The best way when they lost three in a row in 96, that's when he could get the team back, but everybody knew they weren't good. You weren't winning a Super Bowl with Ty Detmer. And I think that's where the Randall Cunningham legend comes in, because he was, in all terms, a franchise quarterback.
Oh, he was, and that's, like, again, just such a talent. I mean, if you were building a quarterback in a lab, like, Randall Cunningham might be the player that comes out of it. At the same time, like, yeah, he didn't have the best weapons in the 90s. The head coach, the support system, I thought could have been way better, and I thought once you saw what that could be with Cunningham in Minnesota, even when he was older, I mean, that team almost made a Super Bowl. So you bring that Cunningham, that support system, with the mobility he had in the late 80s and the early 90s, with that defense, that team, I think, at least makes a couple deep playoff runs. At the same time, Jeff, like, he was at fault too. A lot of the things you're describing, for me, like, my first early memories, and I guess this is showing my age, but, like, I was really into that Michael Vick era, although it was really unsuccessful. Kind of like Cunningham, it was such an entertaining product of football when he was playing. The problem was, like with Cunningham, injuries would kill runs for the Eagles when Michael Vick would go down. I mean, even though 2011, the Dream Team, was kind of a disaster, that team went 8-8. They won four straight games. Like, if Vick stays healthy that year, I don't know, maybe that team actually does make the playoffs. And again, that's the same thing with Cunningham. Like, 1991 especially, the Football Outsiders say that that was the best defense of all time, the 1991 Philadelphia Eagles. And for Cunningham to go down, like, that's a crazy what if. If he stays healthy, maybe that team wins a Super Bowl. So it was on Cunningham, too. He couldn't stay healthy a lot. He wasn't the best playoff performer in three of his four games, although, again, like you said, you can't really blame him for the Fog Bowl, and he did step up against New Orleans in 92, but a lot of the same talking points with Cunningham remind me of the same talking points with Vic when he was in Philly.
Cunningham's lone playoff win with the Eagles is such a bizarre game, because one, no one beat the Saints in the Super Bowl and the Superdome at the time.
Right, it's like tough road win in choking moments.
Like, yeah, it was a tough road game. Like, no one really thought they were going to win that game. The Saints had a really good linebacking core, Ricky Jackson leading that, he just got in the Hall of Fame, but it wasn't really Cunningham that had the big game for them. It was Heath Sherman, of all people. Heath Sherman ran for two touchdowns. It was just a weird game. And Eric Allen picked off Bobby Hebert to seal the deal late when the Saints were trying to drive and take the lead late in the fourth quarter. It was just a weird. It was. You remember the Saturday wildcard doubleheaders that were on ABC?
Yeah.
That was the early game. So you always got, and it was just like that weird feeling, like. It's like, okay, like, how good is this team? And then I think people got a little excited, but that was the start of the Dallas Cowboys dynasty, which I always blame the Eagles for starting that, because in 91, now, granted, Cunningham was hurt, and they were on, I'm trying to remember who their quarterback was. I think it was Brad Goble at the time. It may have been Pat Ryan, but they had a home game against the Cowboys, and they were 9-5. They won five in a row, and their defense was playing lights out. And
was that when they were shuffling through? Was it after McMahon? They were kind of shuffling through all these terrible quarterbacks.
Yeah, and they had nothing, but everybody thought, you know, hey, the way their defense has been playing and the way they've been going, they could beat this young up and coming Dallas team. And that was what the floor with them. They scored 25 points off the Eagles, which I think might have been the most they saw. No, I'm sorry. Cincinnati got 30 off them earlier in the year, but it was kind of a letdown performance by the defense, but the offense only had 240 yards. The defense only allowed 210. So it wasn't it wasn't a letdown performance by the defense. It was more the offense let them down, and everything just caught up to them. But most years, 10-6 makes the playoffs.
It's such a frustrating time, Jeff. I mean, for me, if I was growing up as an Eagles fan at that point, it would have drove me nuts, because that roster, again, is just so absolutely loaded. And that team just had such a choking tendency. I mean, you look at the playoff scores outside of 92. I mean, again, the Fog Bowl's tough. I feel like if that doesn't happen, maybe they make the NFC title that year. But it's just disappointing to see that team win, 10, 11 games in three straight seasons, and to just have nothing to show for it when it comes to the postseason. It is just one of the crazy what-ifs, if things went different, how that team would have looked. If you had to pick a season with that core, right, from, like, again, I want to say, like, 86, like, the start of the Buddy Ryan era to the early 90s when Cunningham was getting injured and eventually, was gone. So from that point on, what year would you say they should have put it all together? Like, what was the year, if you had to pick one, that it likely could have had, like, it was the best chance for them to do it? What year was that?
Well, I think 91 was the year when Cunningham tore his ACL, thanks to Bryce Paul. And, you know, everybody remembers Bryce Paul for that, but Bryce Paul was actually a really good defensive.
I know that name, too, and I didn't even grow up in that era. Like, I know that name.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, he was he played for the Bills, didn't he?
I think he did, but maybe that's why.
Growing
up in Buffalo is probably why I knew that,
Yeah, so I think that was the year. This is why I never understood why they fired Ryan in the first place, because I thought if Ryan had that 91 team, they would. And granted, you know, this is revisionist history here.
Sure.
There's stuff a coach I could have done. Cunningham threw four passes that year. But if he was healthy that whole year, that team makes the playoffs, that team wins the NFC East, and they probably make a Super Bowl run. I don't think the Washington Redskins are the best team in the league that year and eventually become the champions. I think maybe that could have been the Eagles. 1990, the defense was really good, but again, that was the whole letdown from the body bag game. So,
right. But Cunningham was so good in that year, too. It makes you wonder, like...
Well, but that was the problem. It wasn't like Andy Reid's Eagles. They weren't complete teams. They had glaring weaknesses across the board. They didn't have great running backs. Cunningham never had great running backs. He had always had a terrible offensive line. He was sacked the most times from 86 to 88. And he was only sacked 45 times in 89. But still, like, the Eagles, they only made the wild card playoffs that year. Like, they always played in the wild card round. And this is before the whole... They went to 12 teams. Like, only 10 teams made the playoffs in 88 and 89. So, it was a lot harder to make the playoffs, too. We got to keep that into account. But, I don't know. 88 might have been the year they could have surprised
everybody.
I'm
thinking 88, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But the Fog Bowl happened, and, yeah, who knows if they would have beat the 49ers. The 49ers were one of the best teams ever.
Well, that's the problem, Jeff. I mean, it's not just on them. I mean, again, like, this team did have a choking tendency. They did not really support Cunningham on offense. Cunningham had his own issues they had to deal with when it comes to injuries and letdowns in the playoffs. But at the same time, like, you got to look at how good the NFC East alone was. I mean, the Giants were winning Super Bowls at that time. The Dallas Cowboys started a dynasty. The Washington Redskins were winning multiple Super Bowls. So the Eagles are in a division with three teams that are winning championships. And not to mention, like you said, every year you've got to deal with one of the best dynasties ever, the San Francisco 49ers. So, like, that's also a part of this that you got to take into account.
I think a lot of Eagles fans are learning right now. Like, they're in this era where you have a stud quarterback in Carson Wentz, but the team isn't complete. And for the first time in probably since Buddy Ryan was there, you had a team that was good, but they weren't good enough. And right. I think we're starting to – a lot of fans – especially on the Eagles Twitter, starting to learn that, because they're like, oh, you know, this team's a Super Bowl team. I'm like, no, they're not. They're not a Super Bowl team. I'm sorry. And that's how you felt about those Eagles teams. It's like, they're going to go as far as Randall Cunningham can take them. And Randall Cunningham, unfortunately, got hurt all the time, so you never knew how far they could take them.
Jeff, it's one of the best cores to me in NFL history that didn't do anything. And it's a fun time to go back and look at and talk about the what-ifs if things went differently. If we're talking about a championship back then, rather than the first one being in 2017. At the same time, I will say, like, it's kind of like the 2010 Eagles for me. I have a special place in my heart for that team because of how fun they were, the age I was at really first getting into football. Again, I'm showing my age. But, like, that team, although they didn't have a playoff win to show for, I mean, Michael Vick, LeSean McCoy, DeShaun Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, that was a fun team. And I go back and I've watched a bunch of the one day I just wanted to go back and watch Cunningham just blow up the box score. So I went back to 1990 when he played the New England Patriots, and he had like five touchdowns in that game, over 400 yards total. And it was a fun team, though, to watch on both sides of the ball, for sure. I mean, they had Hall of Famers on the defensive side, and then Cunningham on the other side, and Keith Jackson, too. Like, that was a fun team. I mean, that was a fun core.
Well, that's the other thing that's so frustrating with that, because the Eagles didn't win anything, and because football makes such a big deal about winning championships.
For sure.
A lot of players on that team should be in the Hall of Fame. Seth Joyner is the only linebacker in history to have, I think it's like 50 sacks and 25 interceptions.
Well, and Eric Allen, like, I mean, the dude had, what, an 8-interception season? It was constantly one of the best ball hawks in the league, too.
When Eric Allen played for the Eagles, he was arguably one of the top 2-3 cornerbacks in football. He was right up there with Deion Sanders, but Deion Sanders played for the 49ers and the Cowboys, so he was in the Super Bowl.
Eric Allen, winning titles, for sure.
Eric Allen never made the Super Bowl until he was like 37, and he was still playing well. They're a library. Clyde Simmons had 124 sacks. He's not in the Hall of Fame.
If Clyde Simmons is in too, like, I mean, he got overshadowed. I mean, you had Jerome Brown and Reggie White on that defensive line. Yeah, I agree. Like, Simmons, too, probably a fringe Hall of Famer.
I mean, look at Randall Cunningham. I mean, yeah, we can blame the injuries all we want, but if, you know, we're looking at 2001 when Randall Cunningham retires, he's probably a borderline Hall of Famer at that point.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, yeah, the evolution of the quarterback, he gets tossed aside. Maybe someday he'll get in like Harold Carmichael did, because I think people are starting to realize, like, guys like Harold Carmichael were actually good in their time.
Yeah. Well, no, that's fair. I kind of sometimes have a tendency, maybe it is because of my age, to overlook sports, I would say, like, before 1980. But with Cunningham, yeah, you got to look at each player in a vacuum. And I think Cunningham, like, you put him in this era, as I was saying, like, you give him Doug Peterson's offense and those kind of weapons, or, you know, the ones that Michael Vick had in 2010, or that Patrick Mahomes has in Kansas City with Andy Reid. I mean, to me, Jeff, I think Randall Cunningham's a star in the league now. I think he was born simply in the wrong era of football. He was, you know, one of the first, like, multi-dimensional dual threat quarterbacks. And again, like, he had the most rushing yards. He led the Eagles in rushing, I think, what was it, 3 years straight?
Yeah, something like that.
It's incredible.
Well, that's the other thing. They just didn't have anybody. Like, Michael Haddix was a terrible draft pick in 1983. And unfortunately, they were stuck with him for a number of years. And basically, they drafted a fullback in the top 10 of the draft. I mean, how insane is that when you
can think imagine
about
that now? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, and at least, like, with McNabb, too. Like, McNabb had kind of the same issues. He didn't have really any star receivers outside of T.O. the 1 year. But at least he had Brian Westbrook in the backfield. Like, Cunningham didn't even have that.
Yeah, well, that's what also frustrates me with the whole McNabb thing. Like, they say he had nothing. Well, Cunningham had nothing, too. I mean, it was all Cunningham. But I think Donovan had a kill to have Fred Barnett and Calvin Williams as his wide receivers, or Keith Jackson as his tight end. I think what made Cunningham and McNabb so special was they made good players out of average players.
Right, and I guess that's what you want in a franchise quarterback, right? You win because of them. You don't just win with them. And they elevate the talent around them. And I think that's also what they have right now with Carson Wentz. Jeff Kerr joining me of CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at JeffKerrCBS. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on, man. Again, first time in a couple of years of me doing this podcast, but this was a ton of fun. I could have talked with you for hours about this. And so I definitely plan on having you on again soon.
I'll tell you what, you ever get me rambling on about Ray Rhodes, that's where my frustration...
You can tell you really enjoy this topic, because you were going.
You know what, I'm a big Eagles historian. I'm one of those guys, I get tired of them saying Dawkins is the greatest Eagle ever. I'm like, okay, you really got to look up Steve Van Buren sometime. Like, I will go on rants about whenever they say McNabb blew a lot of those games, I'm like, you guys do know Jim Johnson's defense did not step up to the plate in a lot of those championship games, right? So I'm one of those people, I watch these games constantly and constantly.
No, I'm with you. I'm a nostalgic sports fan. I love looking back. Again, for me, like, that consists of still the 2010s, which, again, ages me. But maybe I need to have you on more, Jeff, and to kind of level me out here, because sometimes I can become a prisoner of the moment and maybe overlook old sports. I've kind of been doing that with the Last Dance documentary this week with Michael Jordan. But
oh, you're a LeBron guy, aren't you?
I'm a LeBron guy. I am a LeBron guy.
Do you even remember Michael Jordan, like, when he played
for
the Wizards?
When I was born, Michael Jordan had won his fifth ring. 98, I was one. He had won his finals championship. So again, it's not fair for me to say, but the documentary certainly has brought me back. But that's why I really like doing these what ifs, is because it's kind of making me go back and take a look at what was going on with the Eagles at that time. And with the 90s and the late 80s, like, it was really fascinating stuff.
Okay, I tell people this all the time. I own Philly sports jerseys like crazy. There is one jersey I do not, that is not Philly sports. It's Michael Jordan.
Is it really? Okay.
Yep.
All right, so I'm talking to an NJ.
That's how much it meant to me as a young basketball player who would go out in the street and wear my 23 Jordan jersey and just pretend I'm beating Byron Russell or I'm beating Karl Malone. And I was a shooter, so I wanted to be like him.
Real quick, before I let you go, speaking of jerseys and talking about the 90s, do you have any 90s and late 80s Eagles collections of unis?
Oh, okay. So, you ready for this? Well, my favorite Eagles jerseys are the bicentennial ones that they wore under Vermeil. That they won the Super Bowl. So I have Jaworski. I have a Ron Jaworski of them. I have a Randall Cunningham green one. So I have Jaworski and Cunningham. And one I really want to get, and I don't know why I like it, but it's so old school, and they were so ugly. But I want those Frankfurt Yellow Jackets jerseys. They were so ugly, but you want to have a piece of history. And
no, I agree with that. Like, I think some jerseys are so ugly, and, like, when time passes, they become almost funny to wear and, like, a fun part of history.
Yeah, I actually have the first year they went to Midnight Green, I actually got a white Irving Fryer jersey.
Wow, okay, Irving Fryers are going. I actually, a buddy of mine for Christmas last year got me a Ricky Waters from the first year of Midnight Green.
I'm going to tell you this. Ricky Waters gets a bad rap in Philly.
He does, man.
He was a stud. He was an absolute stud here.
It was funny you mentioned that because I'm doing this all-time Eagles draft thing on the podcast in a couple weeks, and I looked at, I'm trying to like rank the running backs, and I'm looking at Ricky Waters' numbers and watching his highlights, and my friend's a diehard Notre Dame fan, so he loves Ricky Waters. And man, like, talk about a multi-dimensional weapon in the backfield.
He was so underrated when he was here. I don't think people realize he carried that team.
He was one of those guys. Oh, yeah, he definitely carried them. And he was, I think it was too, because it was so short-lived, right? It was only three seasons. But if that guy played like six seasons like McCoy did, or like if the career of Brian Westbrook, I mean, his numbers in Philly would have been crazy.
Well, that's the other thing, too. I actually give Ray Rhodes wasn't the GM at the time. It might have been Harry Gamble, I think, was the GM. But The Eagles did whatever they could to surround their quarterback with weapons. I mean, they got Irving Fryer when he was still really good. And Irving Fryer had two very, very good years with the Eagles. It's a shame that they went into the year thinking Rodney Pete was on the career resurgence. And then John Gruden, this is why I have so much respect for John Gruden. Because he made the number one offense with Rodney Pete and Ty Detmer. That's insane.
They were the number one offense?
They were the number one offense in 96.
Holy cow, I did not know that.
Literally, if you look at that cast of characters in that offensive line, they were not that good. But they had those two. And look, Denver had a great 96, but he wasn't a franchise quarterback. And they thought Bobby Hoying was going to be that guy. He wasn't. That was the Eagles' problem after cutting. They just could not find that quarterback.
Yeah, and then they find it when Donovan McNabb a couple years later, but you're right, yeah, that is another crazy what if. I did not know they were the number one offense in 96, but that, again, that's why I got to have you on more, Jeff, and I appreciate you coming on again. For people wanting to follow Jeff, always talking Eagles and NFL on Twitter, at Jeff Kerr, CBS. Jeff, man, once again, thanks so much for coming on, and we'll have you on again down the road.
All right, sounds great. Thanks for having me on, Louie.